Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, and if this is your first time here, welcome to the show. You'll probably notice we do things a little differently around here. We know everyone's got not a lot of time to waste, so we like to get right into it, and let's do that. My guest today is a rare and unique entrepreneur, filmmaker, author, and playwright cross. But today we're talking to the entrepreneur within him. Following a brief career in criminal justice, he discovered the assisted living for the elderly market, and his path was forever changed. Nearly 20 years ago, after working within two companies in that industry, he co-founded Aegis Living, now one of the most sought-after assisted living facilities in the country. In fact, under his leadership as CEO, Aegis has grown to more than 30 locations in the Western United States, employs more than 2,000 staff members, and to date has served more than 25,000 residents. Now, let's hack Dwayne Clark. You could probably argue that I'm obsessed with business books. Over on the blog, I wrote an article about the 101 best business books, in my opinion. The problem is that I only have so much time, only so much time in a day to read. Fortunately, this is no longer a problem because there's now an app that I highly recommend that will solve this problem for you as it did for me. It's called Blinkist. If you've ever wanted to read every single Seth Godin book or Tim Ferriss book, it's on there. Blinkist is made for busy people just like you and me who want to get the main points of the books quickly without reading the entire book. You could call it the hack, if you will. With audio features, Blinkist makes it easy to finish four books a day. 8 million people already use Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library of self-help, business, health, history books. And as a podcast listener, using Blinkist is just comes sort of naturally. I listen to Blinkist every day now when I'm out walking my dog in the morning. The best part is, with all of this, right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for you, the listener of Hack the Entrepreneur. Go to Blinkist.com/hack, and you'll start a free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled Blinkist.com/hack to start your free 7-day trial. Blinkist.com/hack. I'm not sure if you've noticed this, but Instagram has absolutely exploded in popularity for users. And in turn, it's become an incredible platform for companies and people to reach new customers by drawing the attention of people specifically interested in what you have to sell, and then build an engaged audience around your brand. This used to be difficult, but not anymore. Let me introduce you to Combin, safe organic promotion for your Instagram account. Combin has a powerful built-in search. You can go by hashtags, locations, or any combinations of both. Combin enables you to filter out fake or spammy accounts. Plus, Combin gives you easy engagement. You can quickly and easily leave likes, comments, and follows straight from inside the app. 2019 is the year of Instagram marketing, and you and your business need to be there taking advantage of this opportunity. Combin will allow you to do this. Plus, you can start absolutely for free. No limited time trial period, no tricks. And once you learn the ropes and decide you want to step up your Instagram game, you can upgrade for just $10 a month and get more searches, more in-depth statistics, and much, much more. But to get started absolutely for free, go to combin.com. That's combin.com and scale your business by unleashing the full power of Instagram. Once again, that's combin.com. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Dwayne, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you, John?
Absolutely fantastic, I would say.
Terrific.
It's spring finally up in Canada, and I'm really excited to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. Yes, my allergies are reminding me it's spring.
Mine too. All right, Dwayne, should we jump into it?
Please, let's do it.
Excellent. Let's start here. Dwayne, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
That's a great question. I think the first thing an entrepreneur has to do is believe in themselves. It's a very, very lonely kind of life being an entrepreneur. And if you don't believe in yourself, and if you don't become your own best cheerleader, telling yourself constantly, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this, you're going to fail. Because at the end of the day, when you're sitting there at 11:30 at night, scratching out your business plan, you really have to have that passion to believe that what you're doing is going to succeed. Because if you don't, you kind of program yourself to fail. So I would say that's the very first step. There's many, many others after that.
Is there a problem you can run into where you believe in yourself and your ideas so much that you continue on against everybody else's, like everyone else's wishes or advisement that this is not going to work?
Oh, absolutely. Just think about how many really world famous successful CEOs failed over and over and over and over again until they got it right. And so it's no one else's journey but yours. So you're the one who's going to have to put up with your success or your failures, maybe your family's as well. But at the end of the day, you have to decide what your tolerance level is. And I think that's one of the things that make really successful entrepreneurs really interesting, is they have a really high tolerance level for failure. Because failure is part of the learning. Failure is part of the business adventure that you go through to become successful. If you don't believe that, you think, hey, I'm just going to start this business, it's going to be a slam dunk, that's not going to happen. I've started multiple businesses, and you have to go through a fairly significant failure rate before you really perfect your business or your craft.
With the flip side of it, so success and like pushing your business idea forward successfully, do you believe that an entrepreneur like yourself needs to be stubborn in certain ways? So if somebody advises you this isn't going to work, but you feel in your gut that it is, you need to push forward?
I wouldn't say stubborn. I think stubborn infers that you don't listen to advice, which is, I think, a catastrophic mistake. I think as budding entrepreneurs who are listening to this podcast, one of the things that I would say is you really need to be open to a lot of advice. Now, at the end of the day, it's your recipe, right? So you get to pick and choose what ingredients are going to work for you and then how those ingredients flow into the eventual recipe. But never stop taking advice or don't listen to people. In fact, one of the things that I always tell young entrepreneurs, and I mentor a lot of young entrepreneurs, is I will tell them one of the first things you need to do is do your own skills assessment. So you know what you're really good at and you know what you're horrible at. And if you know those two things, then you know what you should be spending the bulk of your time at. And the things that you're not very good at or don't have the ability to ramp yourself up in that skill set, then go out and hire the absolute best people that will round out your skill set. So you have to really be open to that, to advice of everyone. So you're going to learn constantly.
So your one thing is that you believe in yourself and that you also understand and know that entrepreneurs to be successful need a high tolerance for failing. Now, to sort of push off of your response, what do you consider yourself not good at in business?
Well, I've been in business 30 some years. And when I first started my company almost 22 years ago, I wasn't particularly good at finance, raising capital, looking at deal structures. Now, I've since become pretty proficient at that. So I had to find partners and staff that were proficient in that area. And what happened for me is when I found really, really good people, really smart people in the area of finance, my skill level started to rise because I would learn from them. I would ask lots and lots of questions. I think one of the things that entrepreneurs fail at is you think you have to know everything. Well, first of all, that's not possible. It's just not possible. And what you have to do is you have to have a really super curious mind about things. So, well, how does that work? Tell me about that structure. how would you do this deal? And on and on and on. And that curiosity develops a skill set that you may not naturally have.
Can we go into detail a little bit about this 22 years ago, starting Aegis?
Sure, absolutely. Yes.
From the idea, so what were your steps?
Well, first of all, I had a real vision of what I wanted the company to be. It was very, very, very important to me to be a very high-end provider. It was very, very important to me to do the best care and service possible for my residents, my customers. It was very, very important to me to have a culture that was second to none. And I mean world-class culture. And, you know, I'm fortunate in that I live in Seattle, which is kind of a cultural town. I mean, it's where Nordstrom's was founded and Starbucks was founded and Amazon was founded and Microsoft was founded. We can just keep going down the list. Starbucks was founded. So I know many of these CEOs, and I would go and sit at their footsteps, talk to the people at Costco and say, well, tell me about culture. What do you do here that's so different? I'd go to Starbucks. What do you do here that's so different? And go to Nordstrom's. So that was a really important thing for me, is that I wanted to be a people first, a staff first culture. So many people say, hey, our customers are number one. The reality of the situation is you can't really get to your customers without going through your staff. So your staff have to be delighted. I mean, really delighted if they're going to be able to touch the customer in the appropriate way, if they're able to service the customer in the appropriate way. And we see it every day when staff are not delighted. What happens then is the service experiment comes off very poorly. People are angry or short with you, or they don't give you the appropriate service that you think you deserve, and so on. So you got to make your people happy. You got to make them want to love to come to work. And that takes a huge amount of effort, and it takes a huge amount of focus by the CEO. Last year, we were voted a top 50 Glassdoor company in the nation out of almost 700,000 companies nominated. And so people were calling me almost daily. Well, how do you do this? How do you make a culture? And the VP of human resources would call me, or the VP of ops would call me, or the VP of marketing would call me. And I said, first of all, I can't tell you anything till your CEO calls me. And they were, no, why? You know, we'll implement these programs and so on. I said, because the CEO has to be the champion of the culture. They have to be the king of culture, the captain of the ship. They have to passionately want to have a great culture. And if the VP of human resources, no diss to them, but if they're the only one that champion this, the program's going to fail. So I think CEOs have to give it up every morning and say, how do I make the lives of my staff better? And we have a ton of innovative programs that we do that are cutting edge for us that no one else does.
Why did you pick the assisted living market?
Well, I think it picked me almost more than I picked it. I was 26 years old when I got into this industry, and I went to college. I worked in criminal justice system. I thought I was going to be this great criminal defense attorney. And my sister was on the board of a senior housing company, and I was getting pretty fed up working in criminal justice. And she said, you ought to go interview with this company. I said, oh man, I know nothing about old people. And this is in 1985. And she says, well, go to the library, because we didn't have computers then. Go to the library and read this study called The Grain of America. And just appease me, just go down and read it. And I went down and read it. And I thought, oh my God, the world is going to gray overnight. And this is a huge market that's coming down the pipeline. And that was in 1985. And started with one company, worked my way up the ladder, started with another company that became the largest senior housing company in the world, was the number two guy there. And then in 96, wrote the business plan for Aegis and launched it in 97. So it's been a phenomenal ride. I'm very proud of the culture we have, and I'm very proud of the way that we treat America's elderly.
At what point between those two different companies you worked for in assisted living and then writing the business plan, at what point in that career, that short span of career, were you like, I'm going to do this myself?
I don't know that anyone teaches entrepreneurism. I mean, I've taught at various colleges around the country about entrepreneurism. And I always have kind of weird feelings about this, because I think being an entrepreneur is kind of in your blood, because there's a certain risk tolerance. But to answer your question, I would look at my CEOs and I would say, what does that guy have that I don't have? And I would measure myself up against that person. And then I would say, all right, if someone dropped a whole bunch of money in my backyard one day and I could start my company, how would I compete against the company that I'm currently working with? How could I build a business plan that would compete effectively against this? And that's how I started the company, really. One of the things that happened to me, there's a lot of folklore about this, is the last company before I started Aegis that I worked for, I'd go to my CEO with all these creative ideas. And he wasn't really open to them. And he'd say, oh, well, I don't really want to do that. Oh, I think that's silly. Or, oh, that'll never fly here. So every time he rejected me, and I was a pest because I have kind of a popcorn brain. Every time he rejected me, I would go dump my little piece of paper or my proposal, whatever, in this kind of black box that I kept. And when we started Aegis, the black box became the fundamental principles and hallmarks of our company. It's what we built the business plan. All these rejected ideas. And today in the company for now 21 years, we have a black box in every one of our 30-some buildings. And everyone from the part-time dishwasher to the manager can submit ideas. And we reward people financially for doing so if they get implemented. And some of our best, most creative ideas, best operating efficiencies, best resident programming ideas, architectural things or whatever, have come as a result of the black box. Because I never wanted to have happen to my staff what happened to me where we were rejecting ideas.
So that's what the black box is. It's anybody can drop ideas in there.
Anyone. And we encourage it. We send out announcements. When people get ideas implemented, we send out bulletins that, hey, look what Joe did. This is phenomenal. He's going to get a bonus for this. We're implementing this right away. And so there's a lot of praise and acknowledgement around it.
Dwayne, we hear a lot of people talk about working at companies, maybe fast-growing companies, even before jumping into your own business, so you can learn. You can learn from how they run things. It sounds like, from your story, though, you almost learned as much about what not to do as a CEO.
Well, I think it's true. I think it goes both ways. One of the companies I worked for was very, very service intense. And one of the companies was very programming intense. So I'm into kind of programs and activities and stuff they had. And so when I built Aegis, I took the best parts of both companies that I worked for. And then I added our own elements of creativity. I mean, for example, there was an architectural award given to the best senior housing company every year. There's usually 100, 120 applicants. We won it 3 years in a row. That's never been done before. So we have really creative architecture. Our new buildings look much like a Four Seasons hotel. They're very, very beautiful, very aesthetically pleasing. So I think you do both. I think you learn as much as you can, even bad companies. I was interviewing a young man yesterday. He's 29 years old. And he was telling me that his current company he's working for, his boss is super abusive. And he says, I just can't take it anymore. I've worked years and years and years for this guy since he was out of college. And I said, well, what did you learn? He goes, oh, I learned so much. And then he went down this litany of things that he learned. And I said, okay, that's great. I think we can whine about the current companies that we work in, but we chose them for a reason. It's kind of like the spouse you divorced and go, oh, she's horrible. And you go, why did you marry her? If she's so bad, why did you marry her in the first place? I think the same can be said with companies. Well, why did you go work for them and spend 5 years there if they were so horrible? Oh, well, I guess they weren't that bad. So I'm a person that we have very few time on this spinning ball that we all live on. And so I think if you want to be productive about your time and smart about your time, you can choose to say, okay, that wasn't the greatest experience in the world, but here's what I learned. And then how do you put that into a positive effect in your life? And that's what I try to do. You know, I grew up in an impoverished home. I mean, we not impoverished like, hey, we couldn't buy the new Jordans, but impoverished like we didn't have food to eat. And some people would look at that and say, oh, I had a horrible childhood and I didn't get the upbringing that I should. And I look at that and go, God, that was the best university I ever went to, because I use that as rocket fuel because I don't ever want to be in poverty again. And then that's a great motivator for me to get up every day, lace up my boots and say, hey, I'm going to work now.
So interviewing somebody for a position, hiring, you mentioned 22 years ago or so when creating a business plan, doing research, there was no internet to be doing it the way we could now. That's changed. The way you market your company, I'm sure, has vastly changed. Has the hiring process or like why people would want to work for you, has that changed over the last two decades?
Yeah, two different questions. Why do people want to work for me, and has the hiring process changed? Let me attack the hiring process change. One of the things that I think with people now is they're professional interviewers. They research your company. They know who you are. They know, they read articles about you, and then they come in and they play to the audience. It's a little bit like a stage play, right? So if you're smart, you're going to do your homework, and then you're going to play to the audience. One of the things I started doing 25 years ago was I went to this seminar on group interviews. And people say, oh, group interviews, that's where you have a bunch of interviewers interviewing one person. No, it's just the opposite. It's where you have a bunch of candidates for the same job interview with two or three or four interviewers. So you may have 15 people applying for the same job, all interview at the same time. Now, let me tell you why this is interesting and how I've taken it and tweaked it over and over and over again. People, again, play to the personality, the title, the position, whatever. But what you want to do is you want to catch people off camera, right? So I'll just give you a scenario. Let's say we're interviewing for a marketing person and people come in for the interview. And let's say there's 12 people interviewing. They come into our lobby and we give the receptionist an evaluation sheet. And you may have the guy that comes up and goes, God, parking is terrible here. It's horrible. I can't believe this. And then you have the next person that comes in and say, God, how's your day today? You really look nice. I really appreciate the directions you gave me. It's great. And then you have the person that doesn't make eye contact with anyone. And then you have the person that says, hey, my name's Joe. How you doing? Hey, this is pretty exciting. You get all this information off camera, all this information, tons and tons and tons of information that you're never going to get while you're in an interview setting. So before those people walk in, we have determine if they're polite, if they have manners, if they're impatient, if they're reserved, if they're bashful. All this information is determined in this 15 minutes while they're waiting for the interviewer to come get in. And then inevitably what happens is then the vice president walks in and goes, hi, I'm so-and-so. And then the guy, you have the guy who kisses everybody's rear end and says, hey, I'm Joe, you know? And he's the same guy who was rude that complained about the parking. And so you're like, okay, well, I know what you're about now, right? So, I mean, I could talk about this for 3 hours, but this is a social experiment that's conducted within this room. And we have all kinds of little tests that we perform. And everyone gets so focused on what their answer is, we don't even care about the answer. We're just looking at the dynamics and how they treat each other. That's more important than any of the answers they give. So I've taught classes on this, and it's really interesting. And when we interview both ways, we interview one-on-one, we interview in group interviews. When we interview in group interviews, our retention rate probably doubles. So it's fascinating.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. But you're right. Like seeing the off-scripted part of the person really shows the true self.
Yeah.
And how they'll react.
Yeah. And on the hiring side, I try to hire people that I see in real life. I mean, I hired a guy, I think almost 30 years ago, that was a server at a buffet that's now president of a company. And I hired him. He was at a brunch. He was serving at this big brunch. And I hired him because he was so incredible with the potential customers. I said, that's a guy that I really like to have on my team. And he's now president of a company. And I try to find people in real life that I can watch them do their job and then approach him and say, hey, I'd like you to work for me. And they're usually shocked and surprised. Go, what? So no, I've been observing you for the last 30 minutes. And I really think you're the kind of person that, you know, I'd like to work on my team. I mean, unemployment is virtually zero. I mean, you have in Seattle, it's about 3.2, 3.3%, but really it's zero because the last 3% are really unemployable or don't want to work. So when you get to that level of unemployment, you better be really creative about how you hire people, how you interview people, and then how you retain people. Because if you're not, you can't do this by yourself. I mean, we're hiring 2,000 people in the next 5 years. We'll hire 1,000 people in the next 18 months. So you better have a good reputation about how you treat people, and you better be creative about where you find them.
So would you say that it's not just money anymore that can buy you top talent?
No. I mean, that's why we were so proud of Glassdoor. And we've been voted, I think, 11 or 12 times best company to work for by various publications. People read that stuff. We were voted in the top 15 companies in the nation for work-life balance. people read that and they come in, they go, oh, you know, I'm here because I heard you were voted in the top 15 companies for work-life balance. Wow. Okay. That never would have happened 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Or I'm here because you're a Glassdoor top 50 company. I want to work for a company that people respect who I am. And there's a brand associated with that. And that's incredibly important. The days of, hey, we're just going to whip the horses harder and we hope some of them will make it, those days are gone. You have to be a psychologist with regard to how you treat your employees and the anticipation that you have about them. And that's really important.
Can we move to projects, Duane?
Sure.
And projects is a loose term, but as the CEO of a very, very fast growing company, you can pick one sort of project. So whether it's like marketing and customer acquisition, or it's hiring more people, whatever that happens to be, or even new services you want to offer. But I would love to know, with a company growing at this speed, you talked about the black box, but I would like to know how through your company or through you, you guys come up with ideas, sift through them, and then decide that a project is worth yours and your team's time, energy, and resources.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. First of all, in the decision-making tree, I mean, I think it's one of the reasons the black box is important, because we get a lot of ideas from that, a lot of suggestions from that, so on. So that's important. I think I have a phenomenal executive team. And one of the things that I will say, because sometimes listeners say, oh, this is an old folks home or whatever, we have some of the most innovative, impressive backgrounds of people in our industry. Our chief people officer was one of the heads of HR at Amazon. Our VP of sales is one of the heads of sales at Levi Strauss. Our current we have a president that's retiring here in 30 days. She was the first marketing officer for Starbucks. And our incoming president was the president of Starbucks of America and oversaw 182,000 employees. He was also Bill Clinton's aide. So, I mean,
wow.
Our head of marketing was the number two marketing person at Nordstrom. So we have people with world-class talent that come from multi-billion dollar companies. Our CFO is from the Gates Foundation. So those are my lieutenants that I go to. And my rule is I always try to hire people smarter than myself. Some people will say, well, that's a low bar. But I think it's one of the things that I pride myself in doing. And one of my strengths is really identifying talent. I think if you're going to be an entrepreneur, one of the things you have to do is really be able to identify talent. And that's incredibly important. But I'll just talk about our people initiative, because we're a people-intense business. You know, we're not a tech company. We're not going to automize, create some kind of robotic person to take the place of our staff to touch people every day. And so we're always looking and saying, how can we get people more excited about our company? For example, one of the things we do is we have an in-house lottery. And you may say, what are you talking about, an in-house lottery? Well, I was talking to a line staff one day, and she was running out the door and said, well, where are you going? She goes, I'm going to go buy a lotto ticket. It's a Powerball lottery. And I thought, so what are your chances of winning? She goes, oh, I don't care. I'm just going to play it. And you know, so I started looking in the chances of winning, and depending on how big the Powerball is, it's at least one in hundreds of thousands, if not one in 50 million, depending on which lottery it is. So I went back to my staff one day and I said, we're going to have our own in-house lottery. And they looked at me like I'd been on a booze trip or something. And they're like, what did you say? I said, yeah, we're going to start an in-house lottery. And here's how it's going to work. For every year that a person's in service to our company, they're going to get another chance in the lottery. And I want to have it so it creates life-changing money. And so in our areas that people live, how much would you need for a down payment of a condo? Well, we came up with a number of $50,000. And so I said, okay, so we're going to, all these people are eligible. You know, if you've been here 15 years, you may have 10 chances in the bucket or whatever. But if you're a long-term employee, your chances of winning this lottery go to, I think the top one was like one in 175. So then we use that as a recruiting tool. We said, okay, you know, if you're here 10 years, you have a one in 175 chance of winning $50,000. Now people's ears perked up. And, you know, so that was a big deal. And then people would say, oh, well, I'm not going to leave because 2 months I can be in the lottery and my chances go up. And then we give 10 $1,000 gifts as well. So we may give out, I don't know, a dozen lottery prizes, because we have some smaller numbers as well. But this has become a huge deal for our company. And now people talk about it. They go, yeah, well, geez, I'm part of the Aegis Lottery and I'm going to have 8 chances this year and so on. I have to tell you, at the beginning, when I started to tell my staff about it, they're like, oh, God, this is another one of Dwayne's crazy ideas. You know, they wouldn't even listen to me. I'd follow people around the hallway and say, hey, let's talk about the lottery. No, I got a meeting I got to go to, Dwayne. So, and it's become one of the most successful things we've done. But, John, this goes back to that point about believing in yourself, that this intrinsic insight, this belief that what your ideas are great, and even if they're not great, you're going to make them great. And so that's the basis of being an entrepreneur. Because if I would have just said, let's have a lottery, and all 6 of my staff said, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. And if I would have stopped then, this program wouldn't have been one of the most successful programs we've ever had.
I love it. I love it. All right, Dwayne, this has been a fascinating conversation. I would love to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could.
Sure.
So I've interviewed almost 500 people at this point, and I've noticed this thing called the entrepreneurial gap. It seems to be this place, as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, we seem to live in this place where no matter what we accomplish professionally, we never see ourselves as successful.
Yeah.
Meaning, no matter what metric you hit, seconds before you hit it, you're going to set bigger, loftier ones into the future. And I agree, we have to push forward and we have to look forward. But we've talked about Aegis throughout this conversation. I'm sure we haven't talked about nearly all the ups, downs, highs, lows, wins, and losses. But if you could just, rather than looking forward for the next couple of minutes, if you could stop, turn around, and look behind you at the last several decades in business, and tell me how you feel about the journey until today.
Well, I feel lucky. I would say, start with that. I feel very blessed. I feel phenomenal about where the company's gone. It's exceeded my expectation. I feel fortunate. I wouldn't change a thing, even the painful things that happened to me, making some wrong decisions, picking some wrong people, because that helped me advance to where I am today. And the other thing I think with entrepreneurs is we're not singly minded. I have a film company. I've co-written a play. I've got 6 books that are out there. One of my books is being made into a Hollywood movie. So you have now Aegis is the mothership, and it allows me to do a lot of things that are kind of quench my curious brain. But I think one of the things that I encourage people to is branch out from your core business as well. Because if you're truly an entrepreneur, you will not be satisfied running one business or being kind of tight cast in one particular industry.
How do you branch out without doing too many things? At what point, like in a business, should you start branching out?
Well, I think you got to be really confident in the nucleus of your company, right? So it's got to be on the right trajectory. I don't think a company that's going down by, hey, we went down last year by 20%. I think I'm going to go branch out and start a movie company, you know? So you got to have confidence in the trajectory of your company, and you have to have confidence in your team. And that gives you the flexibility. And I go in and out of my company with some fluidity based on what I think the company needs. So you have to have some emotional intelligence about when it's appropriate, when it's not.
I love it. I love it. So we've talked about Aegis throughout, Dwayne. Could you now give the listeners out there sort of the elevator pitch about Aegis?
Well, Aegis is a highly intensive, highly loving, caring company that is really a disruptive company. It's breaking the mold of what you think old folks' homes are supposed to be. And so if you can envision a Four Seasons hotel that's for the elderly, that does great care and great service, that's who we are. And we're a culture that's second to none. And it's probably, we end a lot of our videos with, we're the family you've been searching for. So for people who are looking for new ventures and new places to work, we're a company that people just are absolutely ecstatic about working for. So very proud of it.
Awesome. Awesome. AegisLiving.com is the site. DwayneJClark.com is Dwayne's personal site. If you want to find out more, if you want to check out his books, all of that, I will link to those in the show notes, as well as I'll link to his books for you so that you can find them easily once you're done walking, jogging, working out, whatever it is you're doing right now. Dwayne, once again, thank you so much for joining me. Thanks so much for sharing so openly. I really, truly do appreciate it. And just keep doing what you're doing, Dwayne, because it is truly awesome to watch.
Thanks, John. It's been a pleasure.
All right, that was a lot of fun. Now we reach the point, if you've been here before, you know where we are. If this is your first time here, this is where we go back through the conversation and I pick out one of the many things that Dwayne said. I'm ready. Are you? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
You know, one of the first things you need to do is do your own skills assessment. So you know what you're really good at and you know what you're horrible at. And if you know those two things, then you know what you should be spending the bulk of your time at. And the things that you're not very good at or don't have the ability to ramp yourself up in that skill set.
And that's the hack. Dwayne, Dwayne, Dwayne. I love this. I love this because most people who've been on this show have, we've fallen into the trap where we end up having to do this skills assessment for ourselves, but it's too late. Like, not that it's too late that we can't change, but I just mean that we've already caused sort of wreaked havoc within our company, and we haven't done it as soon as we need to do it. So if you are not one of those people, I want you to really, really listen to Dwayne. Dwayne's telling you right now, even before you start a company, sit down and honestly do your skills assessment. Be honest with yourself. What are you good at? What are you not good at? And make sure that you're filling the gaps that you're not good at. Or if you can, learn those. But if you can't, then you need to have people in place, whether those are contractors or whether you just know that that's not there, but it will be someday. At least being aware of what's missing in your skill set is absolutely crucial to your success. So do that. Sit down, do your skills assessment, find what you're good at, find what you're not good at. The things that you're not good at, as soon as you can, hire people who are experts in that. Dwayne, thank you so very, very much. All right, that was a lot of fun. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the website. Head over there to the podcast and you will see Dwayne. His show notes, I'll find some links of things we talked about today. If you wanted to check out, you could go to DwayneJClark.com and learn more about him there. But this is it. It's been fun. I absolutely appreciate you stopping by. If you have a chance, leave a rating, leave a review, wherever it is you're listening right now to this show. It helps immensely. It does. But with that, I bid thee farewell. And until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.